hijack my world at night. To replace in the past, we've been cast out of.
Ladies and gentlemen, we're back, and cue the fanfare, because Cole Houston has returned to the table. Not in a 15-minute that turns into a 30-minute conversation. But this is full-blown. This is all-out, not safe for work, rated R. Cole Houston has returned.
This is a full hour, which hopefully will remain simply a full hour.
Yeah. So this is issue 174. We do this every year. We talk about, now I wasn't blessed to have been able to go this year, but Cole, and all, you know, appearing in all places at once, like Looper. He's like the Alcon Looper. Like young Cole tried to kill.
Is that like one of those big hard sponges? Or?
Yeah, that's the loofer. That's if you're Boston.
Okay.
That's if you're from Boston and you want to clean yourself, you get the loofah.
The loofah.
Yeah. The cockies.
It's one of the Muggerville Seven.
I just want to hear this week Batman versus Superman comes out, and I just want to hear Ben Affleck ask where the cockies to the Batmobile are.
That's what I want to hear.
I'm hoping that Matt Damon shows up as Robin.
In the Caribbean, the car keys?
The car keys, yes, that's...
I'm pretty sure I've seen them in the Olympics, like the, you know, right after Cameroon.
Right, they have a bobsled team, right?
Yeah, they do now. Everybody's getting into
it. They heard it was popular. They heard that's how you get popular.
It's become huge in the Caribbean.
First you get the bobsled, then you get the khakis, then you get the khakis, then you get the girl. That's how it works. That's if movies have taught me anything, that's how it works.
Explains so much.
So we're going to talk about Alcon for about an hour here. We're going to get you caught up. I'm curious. This is basically going to be like an interview with me talking to Cole about Alcon this year, because there's a lot of things I'm curious about.
Unfortunately, because of circumstances beyond your control, you were forced, you know, this is going to be kind of like we're tusking it. And I'm going to let people figure out what I'm talking about here.
That's gross. That's all that is. That's just...
Oh, no, not that part. The beginning. First act.
Oh, yes. Yeah, okay. Okay, yeah.
The podcast end of the thing. Not the hideous...
Not me going...
Not surgical deformation. And this sort of just incredibly cruel, I love you.
So why don't you give us... There's no other kind of I love you besides the tusk I love you. So tell me.
Well, that was a damn good looking salmon, I'm just saying.
It was. Tell me, just give us the brief, just give us the rundown. Because, you know, people that listen to the show know what, I think they know what Alcon's about. So how was it this year?
Yeah, because God knows we talked about it enough. And if you.
No,
if
we haven't. Never enough.
Yeah, that's true. But at least enough where you might have an inkling of what it is, this Alcon of which we speak. So, yeah, this was the 12th year for Alcon, which I have to occasionally express out loud because it's the 12th year of Alcon.
Which needs to be, here's what needs to be stated, is that's insane. And here's why. First of all, that's insane. But here's why that's insane. Because there are very few conventions that can claim 12 years. And I'm talking the big ones. The big corporate-funded conventions that can claim 12 years of service to the community. And Alcon can. Like, you know, you look at stuff like Wizard World or you know, the Chicago Comic-Con. And it has changed hands 3 or 4 times. It's not the same show. Alcon is the same show. That's crazy. That it's been 12 years of providing that level of service every year.
Absolutely. And you know, you could argue, well, you know, there's a lot of conventions that have been around for a long time, even longer than that. But there aren't that many that are as approachable, you know, that you can seek out the involvement of the community directly that will allow you to come and say, you know, hey, I would like to do this at your convention.
Right.
And they're at least going to take a look at what you've got in mind and see if it fits. And, you know, it is the most decidedly personable. They've never lost that in right. all those 12 years, all the ups and downs and the moves to different hotels as we continue to outgrow them. And this year is certainly no exception. This is a third hotel in 12 years. The first two were held at the curious Sterling Hotel in Irving, Texas,
which is
always been Alcon Dallas, but you know our first 2 years there were there in Irving. Catherine and I were among the we were the first approach to be dealers. I've probably talked about before, and the only dealers who didn't back out on them.
And if you've never been to the Sterling Hotel in Dallas, Texas, imagine the set of a full moon vampire movie. The place is sort of horrifying. Let's just put it that way. It's. I'm sure it was different then. Maybe it wasn't. But it's. Well,
there was a little, you know, tabletop toy show some years ago that a friend put on, and it was held at a Crown Plaza in Bedford or something. And I think this was in the days of what was that precursor to Facebook? The MySpace.
MySpace.
It was back in the MySpace days, and there was a thread on it on MySpace, and someone wrote in and said, "Yeah, I had a nooner at that hotel one time. It was really creepy." And I got thinking, you probably are thinking of the Alcon Hotel, because you know this hotel where this particular show in question was being held was one of those cookie cutters. This was corporate America. You know, every single there's nothing creepy about chain hotels that are, you know, multi-story tower types, you know.
Right.
But if you go to the Sterling, it's a multi-story tower, but it's got this weird parking garage that crashed into it, and this strange, you know, little ramps and levels, and there's a, at least in the past, there was a swingers club on the top floor.
Well, yeah, and every time I would drive by when I was living in Dallas, like the first thought, I had two thoughts, right? My first thought was, I guarantee you people have died in that hotel. And my second thought was, I bet you they do karaoke every night in that bar. Those are the two thoughts that came into my head every time I drove by the Sterling.
Probably not far off the mark. So, you know, after the second year and it rained torrentially, and the hotel was leaking, it was determined that it was time to find different accommodations. There was a Crown Plaza, and Addison became the home of Alcon for 9 years. Alcon was the first convention of this kind that they had ever hosted.
And they've gone on to do FinCons and just all kinds of different stuff.
Oh, everybody started moving over there. Yeah, FinCon moved over there, Furry Fiesta.
Once you become a friend of convention, you know, everybody will flock to you. Once you once you open your doors to our people, we're very loyal. We're a very loyal people.
What was going to have been the last of my comic toy and collectible swap meets, the only one that was 2 days, was held in that very same hotel.
There you go.
So this year we have grossly outgrown. We loved that venue. It was purpose built, but you know, one hopes that, you know, when you were a baby in your crib, your father looked down on you and said, one day my son will grow to be a man. And so you have that expectation. You want this, as I called it over the weekend, the little show that could. You want it to grow. And grow it did. And this was the first year that Alcon Dallas was in Dallas.
Right.
At the Weston Park Central. What was wonderful about that is having started out as a dealer the first year, as a dealer who brought in game shows the second year, and having been a part of Alcon, a content provider, for so many years that eventually there's like, okay, screw it, you're staff.
Yeah, there's no getting around it.
We've seen so much of you, and, you know, I don't really complain about it, but I often would bring up the fact that it seems like my involvement in so many years, people think that I'm one of the owners. They will ask me, you know, deeply, insider type questions about the whole process. And I'm like, it's not my baby. I just adopt it once a year.
I like to think of you like, what's his name? God, why did I just blank on his name? The guy who was in, the guy who played the attorney in Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas, the guy that was in the Benicio del Toro. I like to think of him like Benicio del Toro in Sicario, where he's like nobody knows why he's ever there, but like they have these meetings of like the U.S. Marshals and CIA and like Delta Force, and then there's this guy, and they're like, why is he here? And they're like, no. Yeah, he's everywhere. He's just here. Don't ask that question. Nobody knows, right. but he knows everything. So,
yeah, and Catherine, I think, put it best when she established that, you know, what it is I've become an ambassador to Alcon, and I can definitely embrace that.
Right.
So as the ad hoc ambassador to Alcon, I will it's been a joy to watch this thing grow and to be a part of it for so many years, to the point where, you know, I was several years ago, I was officially given a department, and which I, you know, said, okay, if I call it whatever the hell I want, they're like, hey, it's your department. So immediately I had to go and rewatch Starship Troopers because I couldn't remember the term, and I named the game show department Games and Theory.
Right. Brilliant name, by the way.
Stuck so well, and I, you know, would fancifully refer to myself as group captain, having taken the name of a group captain, Lionel Mandrake, from Dr. Strangelove, or How I Learned Submarine Love the Bomb.
That's right. you can't just say one thing.
It's like Cartman and I'm Sailing Away.
You have to. Once you start saying it, you have to.
So this year was the culmination of all of that. To me, I felt like this was where Alcon came of its own, and you know, being attached to the inside, to the background, behind the scenes of Alcon, I'm party to a lot of things, like the fact that repeatedly those negotiating the contract with this hotel said, you have no idea what this is, do you? And they were like, oh no, we have played host to many of them. All I can imagine is in their heads they see this vision of a bunch of glad-handing textile executives, you know, coming and, you know, you don't have people wandering around asking, why don't we have that Dr. Manhattan fabric that Rorschach used?
By the way, hold on. Say something real fast, just so I know. Okay, just so everyone knows, we dropped the call for about the last 5 minutes in our recording. I call Cole back in, and I'm not sure whether he actually ever stopped recording in his mind.
Yeah, I was painfully aware that the call went away.
That joke was not going anywhere.
I had set the pause on the conversation.
That joke did not go anywhere. You held on to that thing for dear life.
Damn it, I was not losing that.
Throw me the whip and I'll throw you the idol.
We had to come back and start again tomorrow.
That joke would have been on the tip right of my there. All right. So
I think they really imagined this was going to be some medical convention or, you know, the worst case scenario, a bunch of drunk fat men, you know, shoving each other around in the bar and having a bunch of laughs and saying something about the waitress's tits. And they really were ill prepared for 3,500 geeks.
Yeah, talk about that for a second, because, you know, I always, there was a part of me that always felt bad at the Crown Plaza, even though, you know, every year you would go, for the most part, like the same, you would see the same three or four people, you know, that were working there that you'd seen every year, so they knew what they were getting into. I still felt bad that they had to, you know, clean up and do what they would have to every year.
They're battening down the hatches, because, you know, among all the other things you normally see, you know, month to month throughout the hotel, the hospitality industry, I'm sure there are colors of vomit that don't occur in nature.
Right.
That found, you know, soiling the porcelain in guest rooms, or, you know, and sites that defy explanation, and, you know, a lot of... you know, it's like some sort of sword and sandals movie in there, because you're not accustomed to seeing that much bare skin.
Right. It's like Excalibur. It's like walking by the filming of Excalibur. You're
like Spartacus or something.
Right.
It's like the entire back lot from, it's like Blazing Saddles, you know, where it just all spilled out from the studio into the streets. And
was the new hotel? Did the staff? Could you feel that palpable like fear as the waves came at them? Like that they didn't know what they.
Little by little, it wasn't. You know, they didn't have a lot to go on, so it's sort of arrived in waves. It was just sort of like, you know, first you see Triffids washing in on the shore, and then next thing you know, here's Godzilla, and it's too late.
Right.
And, it starts out small.
Sure.
And then it suddenly becomes this overwhelming tidal wave of things you never imagined existed. And I think that had to have been overwhelming for them, especially like the Alcon principal staff, the owners, all arrive on Tuesday of that weekend.
Right.
And we moved into the hotel Wednesday evening and set up Games and Theories headquarters and as well as a base camp downstairs, and which was absolutely a boon. But we'll get to that. And we arrive at this elegant hotel full of marble and fine, you know,
Corinthian leathers.
Yeah, leathers, seats and couches strewn about and strange little angular, you know, somebody's idea of combining privacy and open spaces or something. I'm not really sure what the architect had in mind, because the hotel itself is a warren. It's it zigzags. It was
so it's architecture by Lovecraft is what you're saying.
Yeah, it's just like, you know, whoever had that did not have a steady hand. It was almost like someone got like an EKG and used that as the template. Because it's a zigzaggy kind of place that may look beautiful, but it's wildly impractical in some respects. Because it adds mileage.
That's what they say about me.
That's true.
I'm not practical.
We get there, and there are all these, you know, smartly dressed businessmen who this is their home away from home, with their Fendi cases and their fine attire and their Botany Bay 5000. And
you're only slightly dating yourself right now, Cole.
That's right. So, you know, whoever is presently in vogue to wear the suits where they have the extra white collar on their suit shirt.
Yeah.
You know, the shirt itself is some kind of, you know, mother of pearl or a mauve, but there is a radiant white collar that somehow expresses
wealth and power. That's what it expresses. Yeah.
Shackled to wealth. It's like the collar shackle.
Break your shackles, man.
That's right.
Wear a normal dress shirt, all the same color, man.
So, you know, you saw these guys who were like, you know, I hope that whatever business you have here, whoever you're coming, you know, your fault-finding tours, your meetings with foreign executives, your trysts.
Wow.
I'm not ruling out trysts.
I'm not judging anybody. I'm not passing judgment.
I mean, there's a lot of little blind alleys you could duck down on the way to the mistress's room. But at any rate, whatever they were there for, I'm thinking, I hope to God that come tomorrow you're not still here, because you're going to be in the elevator with five, you know, 14-year-olds with purple hair and little
tails. They're going to have tails.
And rabbit ears or fox ears or horse ears or, you know, the entire animal kingdom writ small, and purples and greens and oranges and crimson. It's almost like Garrison Keillor describing.
Oh, God.
You know, it's just...
Somewhere in Russia, five people just woke up. I don't know what just...
What the... The sleeper cell
has
been
awake. Well, that was the thing. The thing that always surprised me and made me in some ways happy, in some ways, in fewer ways sad about when we would do it at the Crown Plaza, was you had, and I'm pretty sure this is what I saw, it was Alcon people, and then like seven or eight different sets of just sad flight attendants that would come in.
There were always flight attendants there. Yeah, they were just beleaguered off of a 16-hour flight from you know, Bangladesh or...
Just resigned to the fate that they knew what was going... Like, because you know, if you're a flight attendant, you've seen everything. Like, this is not a shock to you. Like, it doesn't... This is probably the least shocking thing that's happened to you today. But these guys, these you know, button-down corporate America, you know, looking like feds, And then Alcon descends, and it does. That's the only word that
you can
use.
To board an elevator with, you know, these businessmen types, and then the door opens, and in walk these two guys in black berets and jet black uniforms with, you know, fake insignia and badges and more pouches than a Rob Liefeld character. And, you know, full-scale, albeit artificial, armaments and, you know, pistols and long rifles and, you know, with the extra ammo pack saddled
right
on the side. And, you know, they begin to wonder if they, you know, of course, the day I go to Dallas for this damn thing is the day the world ends. You know, this is when the revolution would come. And then a unicorn chick gets on
right,
the
right
bare midriff, and you begin to question... that doesn't fit into the massive armed takeover scenario. That usually isn't the sort of thing you find in Tom Clancy, or, you know, but, or Tom Clancy's Rainbow Six is actually just like a bunch of different Rainbow Power Rangers or something.
Right. This is not Nicholas Sparks white people almost kissing. This is Harlan Ellison, ladies and gentlemen. This is
suddenly walked on the set of What Dreams May Come.
Right.
So it's always fascinating to me. I like you. I enjoy seeing how the mundane find themselves briefly immersed in this world.
And I always loved the Drifter. We would always have the Drifter at Crown Plaza, where it would be like five or six businessmen, you know, and then one of those businessmen I would refer to as the Drifter, because he would often drift off from the pack and end up at the bar with a Klingon and a guy dressed as Daredevil. Like, he would just be like business suit, you know, like...
Yeah, it's not like a bad joke, because, you know, here would be like Naruto and Jesus.
Literally happened.
And, literally, yeah. There were several years where Jesus made an appearance, and Nick Fury and Storm, and perhaps even King Leonidas,
just there, yeah,
in his posing pouch and little else, and most people were completely indifferent to this sight. So, and the other, the Drifter is there, the one buying an extra drink, just in case.
Right, right. But so did this affect, most of my questions are based around the new hotel. Did this affect the convention at all?
I think the other thing that this hotel was not prepared for And it's hard to say, you know, the causality here, but I think the sheer volume of people utilizing this hotel simultaneously, they weren't prepared for, you know, a convention of 200 doctors coming in and sitting seminars, and that are all on the same floor, and occasionally they'll go down to the bar or go be, you know, disseminated out into the world to dine. Is nothing on the order of thousands of people trying to utilize four or five distinct floors all over the hotel that aren't the ground floor, even though that was being utilized to some degree. It was mostly on the second, third, because of certain things with the hotel, the 17th, and then they had board games and console games and all kinds of other fun stuff up on the 20th floor, what used to be a restaurant there and is now just sort of available space.
Okay.
And so you have hundreds upon hundreds upon hundreds of people, many of whom, a great multitude of whom, are also utilizing guest rooms on the remaining 16 or 17 floors. By Thursday, one of five elevators was no longer in operation.
Really?
By Friday, two of five elevators.
Oh, no.
Operation. To make matters worse, the stairway option, occurs at either side of this hotel, which is like a wedge. It's like a long, it's like an accordion that's been pulled outward. So it zigzags and jags, and the interior of this accordion is this curious multi, I mean, every floor had its own set of three flights of stairs that were connected by strange murder hallways. Because it was literally people like, this is where we're going to shoot the murder movie, or this is where you're going to be, your body will be found. Because there were curious little jogs and alleys, and oh joy, more stairs. And so, you know, traversing this maze of stairways became problematic as well. And it was not uncommon to have a 20-minute wait to find a car, especially if you're encumbered by a large, in the elevator, if you're encumbered by large costuming, or in my case, carrying armloads of things. And that, for me, is where an incessant campaign that paid off. The floor where Games in Theory, we had the Canyon Room, which was, to me, purpose-built for game shows. It was a beautiful, tears came to my eyes last June when I saw this room empty and could just visualize its full potential, because it's a large, long, rectangular room that at one end juts out in some curious shape I don't think there is a name for, because there is no... It's like this Salvador Dali geography. It's like, oh, this is a 40-degree angle, and it collides with a 63-degree angle, and this is, we go a little flat for a while, and then a little angle again. Why not? I really don't know what purpose that shape was meant to serve, other than to, it overlooks the what would have been the pool area had the new renovations of the pool, which were supposed to start the Sunday of Alcon, had not begun the week before.
What?
So, no pool.
Oh, my God.
Oh, yes. So, and again, you know, there were things that are unfortunate. And every time I see someone leveling complaints about a convention that are, in reality, complaints against the venue...
Right.
I feel really badly, because people tend to make the two mutually exclusive. You know, don't seem to separate the two in their mind. And I worry that for a lot of first-timers especially, it'd be like, oh, never again.
Now, do you think...
Like,
do you think,
I don't think 2 out of 5 elevators breaking down is going to be a routine. For
right.
No.
Well, and now that's what, I think that's what I was going to ask, is do you think that this hotel will... Because the other thing that Crowne Plaza did was they listened. Like,
yes.
If the showrunners would come to them and say, okay, this year this thing happened and we can't have that happen again, they would work together to rectify that situation.
It is hard to gauge, because there was this undercurrent, and I can't speak to this officially because I was not there. I don't know
right.
the particulars. But it just seems like there's this undercurrent, and given the atmosphere of the hotel itself, I think the hotel is a little full of themselves. Potentially, I think that this is the kind of hotel that imagines they've seen it all, and it's really hard to know whether or not they're going to listen and be prepared and understand what they thought they knew
versus
what they now know, or if they're simply going to say, you know, it would be really nice if you found a different venue for 2018. That could potentially happen, depending on how much we annoyed them by being redefining the word convention to them.
Right.
That remains to be seen. I can't speak to any of that. It's just personal observations. It'll be interesting to see how that plays out. I certainly hope that once the hotel has recovered from the initial shock, that they'll be approachable to talking about what they didn't interpret and how to be more prepared for next year. The good thing is, everything I've seen, even though I was hearing a lot of complaints on the show floor about elevators, and you know, there was a lot of frustration because even with about a 15-minute gap, you know, with shows having an hour in a room, wrapping up in 45 minutes to allow for changeover, any given panel, if you went up to your room on, say, the 10th floor, that panel might have already been started by the time you even got on a car.
Right.
Which was probably going up, because people figured out that what goes up must come down. You got a lot of elevator squatters as a result. So, you know, you figure it out pretty quickly. If you want to go up or down, just take either car.
Just get on one and ride it out.
As long as you're on a car, at least you're going somewhere. And when hundreds of people make this realization in three elevator cars, it becomes a little problematic. So we shall see how that pans out. But overall, you know, the venue was unique. It was different, but I think it accommodated well. There were some the inevitable little things that might have been better in some ways. There were aspects of the show I never saw.
Right.
That there was a large prop room, I'm reasonably assured, actually happened. And I've seen pictures, so it did happen. Where, like, the Stargate Club where had set up their Stargate. I think there was a tart set there and those sort of things. And then the wonderful papier-mâché Jabba Rancor and Thorian, a hammerhead, that one of the Alcon partners had rescued from becoming landfill up in Michigan.
Really?
Yes, in fact, Todd, his brother-in-law, had seen in a Craigslist ad where an artist up in somewhere in Michigan had made these things for Halloween. And November 1, it was sort of like, you got to find a new home for these or they're going to trash. Wifey didn't really particularly care to figure out what to do with these massive pieces, and so apparently it took, I think, two trips to drive up there and bring it all home. And I did get to, a few months back, get to see the Jabba in person in storage.
Nice.
As well as the head of the Rancor. And I'll send a picture along for that, because I may actually just go ahead and embarrass myself and use my Revenge of Princess Leia picture where I'm licking Jabba. Kind of like saying, yeah, how do you like it when somebody sticks their tongue in your face? You know, Eddie and I talked about for the Rancor panel. We got to go in there and get some promotional publicity photos with this Rancor. At the time, the head of the papier-mâché Rancor was in one storage facility and the body in another, so I never got to see the whole thing in person. But, you know, I actually saw the con suite in passing once, going to a stairwell at the hospitality suite. And I went by on Sunday morning after Jedi Cole's morning after and abandoned my remaining breakfast cereal and milk with them.
Oh, that was nice of you.
And somebody in the room at the time was absolutely thrilled by the fact that I arrived with a silver briefcase full of breakfast cereals, the little boxes. And she's like, oh, can I get a picture of that before you unload it? Like, absolutely. This is how we roll with the JCU. You know, overall, once you got, I think there's a lot of growing pains. We had to get used to a new hotel. We had to learn the new floor plan.
Right.
And the new way of doing things. But the one thing that worked in my favor was the third floor was formerly guest rooms that was converted into conference room space.
Okay.
The result is there were a surfeit of extremely spacious bathrooms.
Okay.
They had a sink and a toilet. Trash can, little grab bar for the toilet.
Sure, sure, like you do.
And about 25 square feet of nothing.
Wow.
And a lock on the inside.
Okay.
So we're thinking, you know, there's always going to be a little hanky-panky going on. But you don't want to have a bunch of special private rooms that people, you know, just tuck an inflato mattress under your under your arm, lock that bathroom, and
you're out, right?
Yeah, you can. It can become your private room. It can become your Rassel Castle if you're.
I love a good
couple of ladies.
I love a good ticket to the Rassel Castle.
Yeah, you know, any number of things could be going on in there. You know, yeah, bar for underage drinkers,
fight club. You could have a fight club.
Yeah, it was determined that most, if not all, of these bathrooms would be locked down.
Okay.
Because we, you know, there were ample regular style bathrooms. We didn't need to have private bathrooms for every single person on the floor.
Sure.
And that being the case, there was one conveniently located just outside the far end of Canyon, which is one of those rooms can be, you know, it's got an air wall, it can be broken down into two. So on the what would be the big double door far end. Versus the single door over in that weird geometric area, there was a bathroom immediately adjacent, just outside the door.
Right.
And there was a lot of, you know, well, we'll have to wait and see once we're in the hotel. Can we get the key? Can, you know, will I have to call security each time? And eventually it worked out quite well. The folks at Alcon were very accommodating, and the hotel was very accommodating, and we got that bathroom.
Okay.
And that became the kind of our little storage. In fact, I went and covered up the bathroom sign with one of the postcards that we use for the, it says Alcon Game Shows. That double as both postcards promoting that aspect of Alcon in the off season, and then are the actual game cards that we use during games. We just
it's a brilliant economic move.
Yeah, and you've used them yourself, or it's just on the one side it's got all this stuff about Alcon. We just cover that up with a question.
It's the idea of using the whole animal, really.
It really is. And so I covered the sign up with this thing and put a little post-it note up there for the use of Alcon games in theory only 317 to 320. And there was a little trick to getting the door open that everybody, you know, was shown that needed to know.
Mm-hmm.
And the other, you know, the Hidditz and Quizzitz folks and the Bacon Samurai folks all just, you know, I just would walk away. And then I'd come in there from time to time, oh, look, here's a bunch of Harry Potter stuff. I must be getting ready for your game show. That wasn't there before. And so it was a really, it was the best I've known in all the years of doing game shows, because unless I left it in the room,
right,
which, mind you, is going to happen. I guarantee I will do this to myself. But unless I left it in the room, everything was right there when I needed it. I could stage things, and I could, you know, move crates out of the way and put them up on top of the toilet. And I even put up a little sign that said, you know, for various reasons, we'd rather you not use these facilities for their intended purpose.
Right.
Games and theory team. Especially since it had one of those auto sinks, so, you know, if you accidentally, you know, toss something anywhere near the sink, it would start pouring water all over it. So we had to be kind of mindful of that. But there was just so much space in there. I set up a 5-foot or a 4-foot table, either a 4 or 5 foot little folding table that I could unfurl, and then we had extra, you know, increased our footprint in there, and there was a place for everybody to stack their stuff and stage it. It was a wonderful little thing where nobody, I think it just turned into a storage closet and no one ever really knew was a bathroom.
Right.
Which is, you know, that sort of hiding.
Which is what you want.
Yeah, exactly. So I could go down in the evening and stage the next day.
That's awesome.
Which, yes, it was wonderful. And then we would just rush back and forth from this little, we'd go to the little room and get whatever we needed. And it was a wonderful tool that everyone got to utilize. And, it was fun to watch the mix of stuff ebb and flow and then dwindle as we got closer to the end of the day Sunday, where it was just a bunch of crap and there I got to take home.
Right. You're like, can I get rid of some of this
stuff? And stacks of prizes were gone. But that's what it's all about. And, you know, meanwhile, up in the room at the headquarters up on the 19th floor, we had, you know, the plastic pipe shelves set up in the room, all the furniture pushed out of the way, so crates and boxes and piles of things could be staged and sorted. And the little bit of a glimpse behind the scenes of games in theory, we as the department grew, it became more and more necessary to be able to make things, have the space that you need to. And every now and again, you have to, like, take a few crates off the bed and sleep.
Yeah, this is right. You just got to move some stuff around. You got to play.
The bed itself is an ideal staging area.
Play some nebulous Tetris to get to sleep.
Exactly. It is rather a bit like that, only with an extra added dimension. So I can imagine, you know, it was a boon that they had the go green thing at the hotel where you could sign off on, like, you know, I don't care how skanky my towels are, I'm only going to be here a week.
Right.
And so, you know, there wasn't any maid service trying to come in and figure out what exactly...
What is happening? Who are they going to kill? Like, and how are they going to do
what
it?
What surfaces are left to clean?
Charles Manson, Sharon Tate situation did I walk into?
That's right. I can't really tell what belongs to the hotel anymore.
So what was the coolest thing about new Alcon? like for you, like what was the thing, like what was the highlight? We've kind of talked about some of the disappointments in the venue itself, but in this new era,
even before having a committed room, that was the, if you were going to go to AllCon and see one of the unprecedented 27 game shows, or three exhibition game shows, being the two incarnations of Onliners and the How Could It Get Any Worse that Rick of the United States of Geekdom had produced, that excelled beyond expectations to the point where we had the room, let's just go for it. But the fact that we weren't having to, like last year, wait for an armor workshop to clear out so that we could stage a game show.
You weren't all standing in the back staring them down like the sharks in the Jets until the room would be given up.
Or having to, you know, scramble to pick up all the game show cards that have been strewn about the room so we could clear out so someone could learn how to make hats or listen to a live reading of an author who had the room next. Everything staged in that room was of a kind or was one of my own productions that wasn't a game show.
There you go.
So I never had, it became a literal home away from home, and it was the realization of a years-long campaign, a years-long dream. I understand why it took so long. And that was also part and parcel to the ultimate consolidation. One of the other highlights was consolidating Games in Theory at last, which was another years-long process and a dream to, because we were already producing game shows for so long that it became its own track.
Right.
It became department, and then it became a department head and a staffer, etc. In the meantime, the anime track were starting to produce their own game shows, which is great. I mean, anime should have game shows.
Right.
Then I don't want anything to do with trying to produce them. I know a thing. I know less than nothing. I have negative.
It would be embarrassing if you tried to produce them.
Yeah, I mean, I would be like Speed Racer and King Kong. You know, anime before the term was coined. I Battle of the Planets, maybe?
I don't know.
Are these things anime because they predate? Just like in Splinter of the Mind's Eye expanded universe to Star Wars? I don't know!
You should do one and call it Is This Anime? Yeah, and literally just the fans could just sit there and yell no at you. That's what the whole show would be.
It's just like, you know, or they can just parade me down the hall with the bell going, shame.
Yeah, get off the stage,
shame,
Grandpa.
And so that was very nice because the whoever were producing the anime track had left, you know, they were no longer going to be producing it, so it was, we were finally able to wrest complete control of anything a game show is now funneled directly through Games in Theory. And while I had the right and privilege to pass on this year, especially, I wouldn't pass it on anything. You could have thrown anything at me and I would have accepted it to fill that room.
Right.
We proved you can fill that room with some amazing high quality stuff that I didn't even have to mess with. Because the, you know, Christine and Devin and...
How does that feel, by the way? How does that feel? Like this has been, you know, and I've been a part of this for, what, 5 years, probably? This was my most hands-off year, but the last 4 years, you know, I've been a pretty big part of you putting together this stuff.
You have seen the things that most do not.
But I know that this...
There are a handful of people who see the actual interworkings.
But I know that this is your baby, almost to the point where this is your... You know, this is your Damian Wayne being raised by Ra's al Ghul, baby. Like, you know, like not only is this your baby, but you've raised this thing. You've created the perfect track, and it was yours, right? How does it feel to start giving some of that away? How to start releasing it?
You know, the thing about it is, and I don't know that some of these things, if they were being produced as under anime, or they just sort of fell in a kind of gray area in years past, but I know that, like, Christine and probably Blake and Lauren were already producing things because I recognized, you know, I knew Christine had seen her around last year doing like some of the Harry Potter, where they would have the clever idea of like basically involving everyone and sorting them into houses for Harry Potter trivia. So you were
they're brilliant also, people. Those that group is good.
Where you know, and you're basically trying to win for the honor of your house, and I don't know if you know things fall quite the same as they do in the movies, but I'm hoping Hufflepuff gets a chance at something.
Slytherin, baby. I don't even know.
I just feel like Hufflepuff just seemed like the underdog. But at any rate, so under the banner, they're producing under Hiditz and Quizzits. That group brought Harry Potter trivia, Game of Thrones trivia, yet again, grouping into houses.
Right. What you know. That's what they say.
And, which works out well, because, you know, yet again, houses. But they also did Game Show After Dark, which apparently, from what Rick was telling me, was pretty, like, someone actually, a woman who was a volunteer over the weekend as well for Alcon, who was at a lot of the game shows, mm-hmm. Said that the first question of Game Show After Dark was, what does this particular anagram mean? And apparently it was something that is like the tenets of BDSM. It's like something, something, and consent, or something, 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 consent. It's like, you know, safety and consent. And, you know, reasonable things that the unindoctrinated or, in general, you know, just the casual observer might not even think about. Well, of course those would be the tenets of that.
Well, sure, of course.
Otherwise, yes. No one would do it, at least, you know, by choice. But I thought, wow, what a great way to start a game show, and you know, and
I like the direction that this conversation.
It's like almost Urban Dictionary of the game show. But you know, they did that. They had several shows that they were producing. What was nice is every now and again I'd kind of like go poke my head in, and you know, they had switched out the now playing sign to their thing. They knew where everything was, and it's like, of course they did. These guys have been. This isn't their first rodeo,
right?
So I was able to not have to babysit those who were longtime producers. You know, once I had a chance to say, okay, here's where your stuff is, here's where this is, here's the way we're doing this, and the, you know, the rest of it, they took care of themselves. And that was kind of nice, because I didn't have to go and run herd on a lot of stuff. And occasionally, there was a point where we actually got to go and have a proper lunch. And
wow, that's...
And attend a panel. I don't know when I have attended a panel.
That you didn't have to sit on, right, or
got
run
to
herd on.
To Michael Price tell amazing stories about the, you know, the development of the different aspects of the horror genre in B movies, and it was just absolutely wonderful in that regard. And of course, Devin Pike and his Bacon Samurai crew, like the Hiddits and Quizzits, did a Star Wars Jeopardy.
Okay.
Okay, so you got the, you could go to Don't Lose Your Geek Card Star Wars, for example, and see my analog envelopes glued to a piece of foam core on a couple of easels. Or you could go to Star Wars Jeopardy and see computer graphics and scoreboards and stuff projected onto the wall. And I'm like, you know, but I still... I don't find the inspiration to change, because I think you yourself had pointed out you don't want to do that, because that isn't you. People would know.
Right.
You know,
there's something to be said for old school nostalgia.
Yeah, it's like the little bakery that makes, you know, hand makes the tamales, and then they get enough money to buy a tamale maker, and it winds up just collecting dust because people hated the machine-made tamale.
Right, exactly. All right. You know, So we've got about 5 minutes left.
Oh, crap.
I know. We went through this
pretty quick. With about 3 hours of tales to tell.
This will not be the last time we talk about AllCon 2016. It never is. But
no.
What do you want to leave the audience with when it comes to AllCon? Like, the changes, we've got a new venue, we've got, you know, new content. Like, what if you could sum it up in the next like 4 or 5 minutes, how would you want to sum it up for people to come for next year?
I want to say that if you've never been and you do have the opportunity next year, do come out and attend, because admission for 4 days was something like $50.
It's insane.
There are shows in Dallas that will cost you $50 just to walk in the door on Sunday.
Right.
or on Friday, or you know, best case Saturday, and you go to these shows, and you know, I spoke of, you know, incidentals like maybe 20 minutes waiting on an elevator car, but these big shows that will charge you $50 or $60 a day just to start, and have packages with autographs and quote unquote photo ops, in which you're paraded like cattle and to sit down next to a celebrity who will not engage you under contract, and you are obliged to simply sit, smile, click out, sit, smile, click out. That's not a photo op. And you go to AllCon, and the guests are roaming the halls and checking things out and attending panels and engaging everyone and getting up from behind their table to talk to you because they're allowed to.
Right.
And it feels old school. And you're paying for 4 days for the same money you pay for a day to go stand in a line. You know, if the convention's open for 8 hours and you spend 4 of those in line, have you gone to a show?
Right, exactly. It's Schrodinger's show.
Genuinely, you know, it's like Maximus. Have you been entertained? Of course not. But we are so accustomed to that in the Dallas area that that's become the norm, that when you try to describe AllCon to people, it seems like, well, why would I want to go to that? Because you're going to engage in a community for 10 or 12 or 15 hours in the course of a day.
It makes you feel like a crazy person, because when you're explaining it to it, you just want to yell, you know, like Soylent Green is people, or, you know, wake up, sheep, you don't know what you're doing. Like,
yes.
You know, where it's like, well, this is normal. We stand in line. My plan is to get these 2 autographs, and then the show's over, and maybe I'll get some dinner. That's not a show. That's I don't know what that is. That's the DMV. That's not a convention.
I mean, granted, you have that maybe once in a lifetime opportunity. Like, a lot of people are anxious to see Stan Lee. This is his last autographed tour. You know, and in all fairness, I mean, the man's pushing 100 by now. He's got to be
right.
But you know, but we sometimes sometimes buy those once in a lifetime opportunities at the expense of other types of once-in-a-lifetime opportunities that I guarantee you more stories after 4 days at AllCon than you will ever have at 1 day at some of these mega autographs.
Well, if it tells you anything, I got a call from a friend of the show and an artist of the show, Bobby Blakey. I think it was Monday, and I talked to him for about 15 minutes, and he told me about 35 stories in that 15 minutes from AllCon weekend. Just rapid fire. You know, I kicked a pinata, and then I saw this guy, and then I went over here, and then I did this, and I had a really good weekend, and I sold lots of stuff, but then there was the elevator, and then I went up 5 floors, and then I came down 3, and it's just like, whoa, man.
Literally, and there's so much going on, like cousin Steven, who comes out and just, AllCon has become his annual vacation. He will expend a week of vacation, whatever, you know, amount of money it's costing him to stay in the hotel for 4 or 5 days, is everything. I mean, this is his vacation trip.
Right, this is his time.
And he spends a good deal of that toting bales and running herd on stuff for me and running up to the room for that one other damn thing we forgot.
And inventing drinks.
And, you know, we had a little prank we were going to do. And then when the pinata, bless him, Todd got smacked in the face with a foam-covered pinata bat because they couldn't dangle it from a mezzanine. They were actually in close proximity. And somebody accidentally hit him in the face. So Saturday night's pinata was canceled. And Stephen and a friend of his went and bought a pinata and candy and goodies to stuff it with, and we never could work in a time to have our own just beat the ground level pinata to death.
Right.
Because there's so much going on that even if you plan things, you may not have time to do them.
And right.
Especially if you're hosting, you know, 14 game shows and 2 talk shows and
Lord knows what else.
Panels and trying to be crowned king of AllCon onliners and being beaten by a kid less than half your age.
Smart kid, too.
I insisted if we could get him on onliners. It is little wonder he was crowned king of AllCon. But there is so